And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com, as of course available in all of your favorite podcast apps. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from the Law Group coming up a little bit later on in the show this morning. There was a very important committee hearing that took place here in North Carolina yesterday, and it was actually a federal hearing. Now, typically, federal hearings take place in Washington, D.C., but over the last year or so, we have seen that the House Judiciary Committee, the Subcommittee on Oversight, has taken their group on the road. And this is important. I mean, I'm glad the committee meetings happen, but when they're happening in communities, when they're happening in the backyards of places where issues are existing, I think it has a far greater impact. So yesterday morning and into the early afternoon, the committee held a hearing with the title Victims of Violent Crime. It took place in Charlotte at the Charles L. Jonas Federal Building, and it paired together a group of witnesses and members of this subcommittee, the Judicial Subcommittee on Oversight, dealing with victims of violent crime. And we have seen a major uptick in not necessarily, the violent crime itself, but the public interest on said violent crime. And this has turned into a major political battle on something that, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm pretty surprised. Violent crime and being on the side of violent criminals is a losing political issue for those on the left. It just is. There's nothing beneficial to being on the side of violence. There is nothing beneficial to being on the side of crime. Yet for whatever reason, we are watching Democrats all across the United States continue to try and pander to criminals. Most of the issues that we are dealing with, you look at the horrific murder of Irina Zaruska back on the Charlotte light rail on August the 22nd. They're in large part, that could have been avoided if a dangerous, violent, repeat offender with severe mental issues was not let back out on the streets. But because of weak magistrates, weak judges, weak leadership, if you even want to call it leadership, from the Charlotte City Council, the Mecklenburg County Commissioners, that individual by the name of DeCarlos Brown Jr., a 14-time repeat offender, a 14-time repeat criminal, was allowed to walk and roam the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina, until August the 22nd, when he decided he was going to pull a pocket knife out and slit the throat of Irina Zaruska and have her bleed out and die on the Charlotte light rail. It's a gruesome situation. You likely have all seen the video of this. And it's completely avoidable. Soft, weak on crime policies being pushed by those on the progressive left do not work. They not only don't work, they make your community less safe. They make the place that you live less safe, and they destroy cities. And so this House Judiciary Committee on Oversight meeting in Charlotte, where this happened back a little over a month ago, and holding the Charlotte City Council, the Mecklenburg County Commissioners, and Democrat members of Congress, holding their feet to the fire on this is exactly what needed to happen. Now, the ranking member of this oversight committee is Jefferson Van Drew. He is a Republican out of New Jersey, and this is how he opened his comments at the meeting yesterday.
The latest name we speak of is Irina Zaruska, a young woman with her whole life ahead of her, one who fled an actual war zone to chase the American dream. She wanted to be here so badly, I think some of you may know, that when she was murdered, her parents requested that she be actually buried here in America because she loved America so much. And what's perverse about all this, it wasn't in the battlefields of Ukraine where she lost her life. It was right here on an American street in an American city. It's unacceptable. We're tired of it. We're sick of it. It's sickening. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have to accept it. It doesn't have to be this way. Bad leaders let this happen. Weak leaders.
And he's absolutely right. It's bad leadership. It's weak leadership. And it comes back to a phrase that you've heard me say a lot over the last month. In a way to try and claim that you're a good person, in an attempt to claim that you're compassionate or that you feel for individuals that are struggling with issues like mental health or people that may have not had the best upbringing, in an attempt to pander to these individuals, we have allowed our streets to turn into violent war zones. I mean, look at the city of Chicago, where in, you know, every weekend you've got 20, 30 people getting shot and killed. Here are the latest crime stats out of the Windy City. Year to date, 284 people shot and killed. More than 1,200 shot and wounded. 338 homicides. In the month of September, here as we round out the month, 43 people have been killed in the city of Chicago. It's unacceptable. It shouldn't be this way. But because of Democrat weak policies, compassion, so-called compassion from those on the progressive left, they would rather have you get murdered in the middle of the streets than hold violent criminals accountable for the things that they do. It's disgraceful. It's a losing political issue. And I think you're starting to see a uptick of individuals, even some that are on the middle or in the middle of the political aisle, maybe even lean a little bit to the left, are starting to come to the realization that this stuff is not sustainable, that these policies are not practical for any city. And so as the national outrage continues to pour into places like Charlotte over Irina's murder, I'm glad that it is. It's unfortunate that she died. It's a tragedy that she couldn't go home from her job. You know, the irony in all of this is even as an immigrant who was relatively new to the United States, she was being a productive member of society. She was working. She was studying to go through the process of getting her driver's license. She was assimilating to our culture. And so we took her, who was setting herself up to be a useful, productive member of society, we put her down a peg from DeCarlos Brown Jr., a 14-time violent repeat offender who was providing nothing to society, who was adding nothing to the city of Charlotte, the state of North Carolina, or the United States. Nothing. He was homeless, wandering around the streets, attacking people. And we put him at a higher priority than Irina Zariska. It's a sham. More from Representative Andrew.
Why are judges, elected officials, leftist nonprofits, and activist groups doing all they can to make our streets more dangerous? I don't know how else to say it. It's purposeful. It's not accidental. Let's talk about, you know, why we're here. A magistrate judge let this killer walk free even after his own mother said he was dangerous and that he was a real problem and she was concerned, his own mother. The magistrate judge said, well, this is the 14th time he committed a crime, but, you know, I think it'll be his last because he signed a handwritten note that he's going to be good. Seriously? Are we serious about that? You're looking us straight in the face and saying that? You don't need a degree to know that it's absurd. You don't need to be an attorney or a judge to know that it's wrong. You don't have to have a high-ranking title to know that it doesn't make sense. All you need is common sense and empathy and a heart and the desire to see this nation to be the best nation that it can possibly be. But he was allowed to walk our streets. And now a young woman, and there's other stories, it's not the only story, but this young, beautiful woman with her entire future in front of her, working three jobs, living the American dream, believing in America, she's gone. This hearing's not going to bring her back. Your testimony's not going to bring her back. The good people who are here watching is not going to bring her back. There's nothing we can do except to make sure that her life has meaning. So if it has meaning, it means we stop doing this, that we stop putting bad people back on the street. And you know, it's something we can relate to because millions of Americans around the country use transit every day. You know, in Charlotte, there's a great group of people who are really working here to make the transit even better and safer and are doing wonderful things. We have to allow them to do that. We need the laws. We need the judges. We need the attorneys. We need the attorneys general. We need the prosecutors and DAs to do the right thing, to do their damn job.
To do their damn job. Doesn't get any simpler than that, does it? Just do your job. Don't allow somebody like DeCarlos Brown Jr. back out on the streets. Don't allow the litany of criminals that rinse and repeat revolving door through the judicial system in places like Mecklenburg County, in places like Durham, and other Democrat strongholds across North Carolina. Don't allow them back out on the street. It's not very complicated. You don't have to twist the rule of law to hold these people accountable. You don't have to, you know, squint and try and read between the lines of what the general statute says or what the penal code or what the criminal code says to hold these people accountable for the things that they do. You just have to enforce the damn laws that are on the books. But for whatever reason, Democrats are unwilling to do that. Representative Deborah Ross, who is a member of North Carolina's congressional delegation, she is a Democrat, made a complete and total jackass of herself right at the beginning of this hearing when she pointed out a photo that somebody had brought indicating that the individual in the photo was Irina Zaruska. It was not. It was a photo of Logan Federico, a 22-year-old girl who lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, who was murdered at the University of South Carolina by a violent repeat offender. This caused the hearing to just go off the rails right literally as it began. Just a couple of minutes into the hearing, Deborah Ross had to be scolded by Logan's grieving father, who called her out for not knowing his daughter's name. Take a listen to this.
To be honest, and for our victims, this hearing is too little, too late. We should...
By the way, before she continues, don't you just love the smug nature of these Democrats? This hearing is too little, too late. No shit, Sherlock. Thank you. We're fully aware that this hearing is not going to bring back anybody who died. Thank you for making that point. I'm not sure I would have understood the point of this hearing had Deborah Ross not made that comment. Democrats are running in the other direction from these policies because they are so disastrous. And then you have to listen to them pearl clutch and pontificate about how this is just too little too late. And we just haven't done enough and we just need more money. Give me a freaking break.
We've been doing more to prevent crime and address the lack of mental health care long before this hearing, particularly... Oh, I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
Okay.
I am so sorry.
This is Logan Federico.
Thank you so much for bringing that. Thank you. Thank you, sir. I am so sorry for you. I'm so sorry for your loss, and my heart goes out to you. My heart goes out to you.
How dare you not know her?
So we should have been doing things to prevent Logan's death and Irina's death, and I am so sorry.
We should have been doing things to prevent their deaths. Deborah Ross, we have laws on the books that would have prevented these deaths. It is your political party. It is the Democrat Party that wants to allow violent criminals out on the streets so that they can claim they're compassionate. What the hell are you talking about? It doesn't make a lick of sense. I didn't bother pulling a lot of the Democrat clips from this hearing because they just don't make any sense. More money for mental health care, more money for this, more money for that. It is the same old story with those on the left. There is a problem. The only solution is more money. Even though you and I and the vast majority of the American public know, money is not the solution to this problem. Holding criminals accountable for the things that they do is the solution. However, Democrats like Deborah Ross aren't interested in doing that.
To my Republican friends, this is not Democrats' fault.
Yes, it is.
This is the fault of Congress and our legislature to not do enough. They want you to believe that tough on crime and saying law and order is going to solve the problem.
It will.
And they want to believe that a slogan will make America safe again. But if that is the case, why is the Congress cutting aid to local law enforcement by $100 million next year?
Ah, yes. It's our fault. It's always our fault, right? No matter what. Democrats and their ridiculously stupid policies on violent criminals in the judicial system. They don't want to hold criminals accountable. And somehow it's my fault. Again. And somehow it's your fault. Again. It's amazing. One of the continuing threads that we've had on the show since we started in January has been the Democrats' inability to self-reflect on anything that they do, whether it was the 2024 presidential election, immigration, crime. I mean, the list just goes on and on. There is no ability for them to self-reflect on the things that they do. Zero. And then you've got to listen to morons like Deborah Ross say that it's Congress's fault, it's the Trump administration's fault, it's the Republicans' fault that violent criminals are out on the streets. The mental gymnastics that you have to go through to justify that that is the cause of this problem is literally insane, because there is no facts and no evidence that back it up at all. What places across the country are you seeing out-of-control crime? What places across the country are you seeing consistent repeat offender criminals doing exactly what you would expect them to do, repeat crimes? In Democrat-run cities, with cashless bail, with these, oh, just sign this note and you can come back later. I'm sure you're not going to go out and commit more crimes. I'm sure you're not going to go out and commit more violence. It is absurd with some of the arguments that are being made by those on the left. So in the first part of Deborah Ross's clip, you heard her getting scolded by a gentleman, his name's Steve Federico, testifying as a witness in front of this committee about the murder of his 22-year-old daughter at the University of South Carolina. He and his family, residents of the Charlotte metro area. And I'm not going to give the clip any more introduction and opening. Just listen to the pain in his voice. Listen to the story and listen to the criminal rap sheet that the individual that killed his daughter had. It's hard to listen to, I'll admit.
Laying down, going to sleep, feeling somebody come in the room and wake them and drag her out of bed, naked, forced on her knees with her hands over her head, begging for her life. Begging for her hero, her father, me, that couldn't be there. She was 5'3". She weighed 115 pounds. Bang! Dead. Gone. Why? Because Alexander Devontae Dickey, who was arrested 39 times, 25 felonies, was on the street. How about that? How good are we doing for our family? How good are you doing for your kids? He should have been in jail for over 140 years for all the crimes he committed. You know how much time he spent in prison? A little over 600 days in 10 years. He's only 30 years old. He was committing 2.65 crimes a year since he was 15 years old. But nobody could figure out that he couldn't be rehabilitated. Well, you'd have to put him in prison to see if he could be rehabilitated. Isn't that the idea of prison? But no, my daughter wanted to be a teacher. She finally figured it out 2 weeks before she was executed.
Heartbreaking and totally preventable. 39 times Alexander Dickey was arrested. He's 30 years old. 25 felonies. And he was roaming the streets of North and South Carolina. And Democrats want you to believe that the blame is not on them. They want you to believe that it's not their fault for their stupid, piss-poor policies like cashless bail. Like, oh, we just need to spend more money on mental health care. This guy had been arrested 39 freaking times. At what point is there no rehabilitation of an individual like that? 39 times? It's absurd. He's 30 years old. He's not 70. He's 30 years old. 25 felonies. A history of being a violent criminal. But nope. He was out and about roaming the streets of South Carolina because of weak leadership, piss poor governance, and compassion, which I'll throw in air quotes. Absolutely preventable. But you'd have to be tough on crime. You'd have to be willing to hold individuals accountable for the things that they do. But as you and I are well aware, Democrats are unwilling to have that conversation. They have no interest in talking about the criminal. They want to talk about how police are doing the wrong job, how we need to defund them, how we need to spend more money on mental health care. By the way, mental health care, we used to have facilities that you could send people that were struggling with severe mental disabilities and illnesses. Democrats shut all those down through the 60s and 70s because they were inhumane. And so now they want to spin these facilities back up that they shut down. It's a disgrace. Actions have consequences. And the actions of being soft on crime, the consequence to that is innocent individuals like Arena Zaruska or Logan Federico are murdered, are killed because Democrats do not want to hold people accountable for the things that they do. It's a complete and total sham and a heart-wrenching story from Steve Federico. We also heard from one of the other witnesses at the committee hearing, Officer Justin Campbell. He's actually a police officer with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. He testified during this hearing as well, and he didn't hold anything back at all.
April 29th of 2024, the Marshal Service was serving a warrant for a convicted felon for possession of a firearm again. While serving that warrant, three members of the task force and one member of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department were gunned down and murdered that day, along with five others, including myself, that were injured. That day was chaos. Responding to that call, multiple officers, not only dead but injured, were taking gunfire from an elevated position by a known convicted felon. During the process of extracting the officers, I end up breaking my foot, which resulted in me being diagnosed with regional complex pain syndrome. It's a miserable diagnosis, which led to the amputation of my right foot. I will no longer ever be where I was prior to that day. Now, in my hand, I will gladly submit this for your records, is his entire arrest report. And in this report starts in 2009, where he burglarized a residence with a stolen firearm. After he was taken to jail, he was released, where he committed multiple other offenses prior to him going to prison. He was released from prison and again continuously committed violent crimes with firearms. Now I ask you, why is it that we take people who commit these heinous crimes and we do not hold them accountable for their actions? We sit there and we try to give it a reason as a mental health issue or some other type of issues that realistically doesn't take blame. Now, the judicial system here in Mecklenburg County, I can speak firsthand, is trash. And I'll say it again over and over again. And I'll take the repercussions, what comes next after me saying that. But the magistrate system here has no idea what they are doing. This cashless bail system is a joke. I believe in my heart that if you commit a crime against another person violently, that you should not have a bond. That you should sit in jail until your time comes. Now, there's a lot more that I could say angrily, but I'm trying to swallow my emotions because I've seen multiple committees such as this one, and words are exchanged, but action never comes to it. So I'm going to ask you guys, all of you, to at some point look at us and look at the future victims, because there will be more, and say, at what point do we hold them accountable for their actions and stop playing this political circus game?
Well said by Officer Campbell. There will be more. And unfortunately, he is absolutely correct. There will be more. Because we know that individuals who have no respect for the rule of law, no respect for their fellow man, no respect for society, no respect for anything, will continue to commit heinous acts of violence. We know it. Until eventually, they commit something so atrocious, like slitting the throat of Irina Zaruska, killing her on the Charlotte light rail, or executing a 22-year-old girl by the name of Logan Federico. Until that point, when they commit a crime so heinous that they will rot in prison for the rest of their lives. There will be more victims. There will be more unrest. There will be more violence on streets across the United States with these policies. And, you know, the comment was made at the opening by Congressman Van Drew from New Jersey. You don't have to have a law degree. You don't have to have a doctorate in criminal justice or anything of that nature to understand how this plays out. It's not overly complicated. It's not hard to wrap your head around. You don't have to have spent any time in the judicial system to understand what the end result will be here. More victims, more families, more police officers, more communities dealing with this issue. And so a lot of this is dealing with things like cashless bail, which Democrats love. They don't believe that criminals should be required to post bail. They should get arrested. And while officers are still filling out paperwork, those individuals should be back out on the streets. One of the other witnesses is an individual by the name of Michael Woody. He owns a group called 828 Bail Bonds. So he's a bail bondsman. And he's also North Carolina's representative to the National Association of Bail Agents. So this is a guy that you would call and consider a subject matter expert on bail, on bond, on how this system works. He also testified in front of the committee as well.
Her killer was DeCarlos Brown. He was a repeat offender with 14 prior arrests, and released unsecured bail, cashless bail, on his own recognizance earlier this year at that, despite concerns about his mental stability and his chronic diagnosis of schizophrenia. He was still released with cashless bail. The Department of Justice filed a federal complaint on September 9th charging Brown with causing death on a mass transportation system. They've elevated his charges to the federal level. Irina fled the horrors of war only to lose her life to an offender who should have been held accountable through secured bail. This wasn't random violence. It was a preventable tragedy enabled by the reckless policies that prioritize offender convenience over public safety. Here in Mecklenburg County, courts have embraced what they call reform, unsecured bonds, and taxpayer-funded pretrial release programs. While studies show mixed results on appearance rate, the fundamental problem remains. Unsecured release removes the accountability that comes when families and communities have financial stakes in ensuring compliance. Meanwhile, stakeholders report ongoing cycles of missed court appearances and rearrest. When offenders fail to appear in court, the courts must continue their cases in absence and even sentence them in absentia, costing taxpayers enormous resources while denying victims their right to provide impact statements, such as you've heard today. And offenders with serious mental health issues, such as Brown, are released without the evaluation and treatment that could prevent these tragedies. These policies aren't just dangerous, they're expensive. Mecklenburg County alone has spent $345,000 in local taxpayer funds for a new pretrial staff. They've wasted over $1.6 million in federal grants and at least $3.3 million in a private foundation money. The county now reports $3.87 million total they spent to put these offenders back on the street with no accountability. That's over $5 million to operate a system parallel to secured bail, which worked effectively and cost taxpayers nothing and provided more security for families. This is the definition of government waste, multiple bureaucracies, and millions in expenses to avoid using the system that required no taxpayer investment.
You heard a word from Mr. Michael Woody there multiple times, the A word, accountability. That's really what a lot of this comes back to. Accountability. For whatever reason, I honest to God don't know the answer. I'm not being sarcastic. But for whatever reason, we have determined that criminals should no longer be held accountable for the things that they do until they are, again, so heinous that they have to be. And I really don't know why we got to this point. I really don't understand what... what was the goal? What was the objective? We just assumed? We closed our eyes and just hoped that this wouldn't happen? We just hoped and prayed that dangerous repeat offenders, some with mental illness, some with not, would just magically be rehabilitated because they'd got arrested for the 15th or 16th time, and this was finally going to be the breaking point? What were we expecting to happen? A great comment coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. The only outcome can be societal destabilization. That's clearly their goal. I have to agree with you completely because nothing else makes any sense. Why do you believe that somebody who has been arrested 39 times at the age of 30, what makes you believe that they're going to clean up their act? People make mistakes. We see that all the time. Mistakes are one thing. Should they still be held accountable for the things that they do? Yes. But if somebody is going to show that they're willing to learn from the things that they have done, learn from the situation that they put themselves into, that's one thing. But we're not talking about people that are willing to learn from the things that they've done. We're not talking about mistakes when you're talking about hardened career criminals at the age of just 30 years old. That was the individual that killed Logan Federico. Or in the case of Irina Zaruska, a 34-year-old who had been arrested 14 times. Violent acts. Whose own family, his own mother, said he should not be out roaming the streets because he's schizophrenic. He's mentally unstable. Yet, he's out and about, not paying for a seat on the Charlotte light rail, and then killing Irina Zaruska. It's absurd. I've got some additional commentary from members of North Carolina's congressional delegation who were at this hearing in Charlotte yesterday. We'll get to those details and some of those clips coming up here in just a couple of minutes. But before that, this show is only possible and takes a lot of time to put all of these clips together. It's only possible thanks to our great advertisers, including the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a real estate transaction, maybe you're injured on the job, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. It's not a big national law firm. They're located right here in our backyard in downtown Wilmington. And just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support here of the Nick Craig Show. Coming up tonight, very much looking forward to it. As always, our Nick Craig Show monthly hangout will be taking place 7 p.m. this evening. That takes place for those that subscribe to the show over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. You can subscribe to that $5, $10 a month and get access to our bonus content, including daily show notes and this monthly Zoom chat that we do 7 o'clock this evening. I'll send out another notification to all of those that are on the Patreon. Look forward to chatting with everybody tonight at 7 p.m. And also thanks to all of you who support the show financially and keep us on the air here on the Nick Craig Show. All right, back to a busy hearing in Charlotte yesterday as the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Oversight did meet in Charlotte. The headline, Victims of Violent Crime, and you've already heard the testimony. You've heard from a member of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. You heard the heart-wrenching story from Steve Federico, whose daughter, 22-year-old Logan Federico, was executed on her knees by a 39-time violent repeat offender. It's a tragedy. And so North Carolina's congressional delegation, at least the Republicans, the only sane ones in the room, is Democrats like Deborah Ross can't identify who's in a photo. Alma Adams made comments that this is nothing more than a trick and pony show. Republicans are at least trying to figure out a solution to this problem while Democrats point the finger and blame everybody else. Here's Congressman Brad Knott.
There's been a lot of discussion about partisanship and how the Democratic Party is not soft on crime. And there are some Democrats who are not soft on crime. But in terms of defunding the police, a clarion call for the Democratic Party. Does that make us more or less safe?
I would say that makes us less safe.
What about working feverishly against long-term incarceration? Is that more or less safe?
Less safe.
Mr. Woody, what about cashless bail? Again, that's a uniquely partisan initiative funded by Democrats nationally, locally, and state level. Does that make us more or less safe?
Cashless bail makes us less safe.
Mr. Campbell, in regards to the complete disregard of our borders, our immigration laws, does that make us more or less safe?
Less safe.
What about decriminalizing all drugs? That's a partisan initiative in some parts of the country. More or less safe?
Less safe.
What about funding NGOs? Tens of billions. We talk about funding. We talk about mental health. We talk about victims funding. Tens of billions of dollars over the last 4 years that was handed directly to people who were here illegally. Does that make us more or less safe?
Be less safe.
So it seems to me that we have an ideology problem, not a funding problem. And would you say it's a coincidence that the top 10 most dangerous cities in the country are led locally by Democrats?
I'm going to pause Congressman Brad Knott there before we get the answer to that question. He lays out perfectly the situation that is in front of us. defunding the police. That was the big Democrat rallying call after George Floyd, the upstanding citizen that he was back in the summer of 2020. They've led the charge on that through USAID and other entities. We have funded all of these NGOs and all of these nonprofits at the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars worth of your and my taxpayer dollars each and every year to provide all of these so-called great reform programs that we hear about. All of the top 10 cities dealing with crimes are all led by Democrats. You think there's a connection there? Props to Congressman Brad Knott for the questioning and the way he's laying this out.
Is that a coincidence?
No.
Now, Mr. Federico, I want to ask you, there's been a lot of discussion about you cannot incarcerate your way to public safety. Do you agree with that?
Well, how can we find out? We don't do it.
Right.
I mean, there's percentages out there that after three years of release, 68% of them are rearrested.
Right.
So we've got to figure it out first. Put them there first. Then let's do the math.
Right. If someone has 39 arrests, 25 felonies, you think they've earned the right to be in a jail cell?
He is probably one of the best resumes of a criminal.
You think he deserves mental health or does he deserve to be in jail?
I think he deserves to be dead.
Yeah.
Deserves to be dead. Hard to argue with the case that Mr. Federico and the Federico family had to deal with earlier this year after a 39-time arrested criminal, 25 felonies, executed his 22-year-old daughter in South Carolina. He says it's the poster child. It's the perfect example of how these policies don't work. The idea that somebody of that nature is out roaming our community is almost unbelievable. But then when you look at the rhetoric, you look at the magistrates, you look at the district attorneys, you look at George Soros-funded groups and the prosecutors that they fund elections for all over the country, it unfortunately makes a whole hell of a lot of sense that these individuals are roaming the streets until they decide that they're going to murder an innocent 22-year-old girl, pull her out of bed in the middle of the night, and shoot her in the head, which is exactly what he did. Tragic situation. Completely avoidable, completely preventable, if we were willing to hold criminals accountable. Congressman Mark Harris talked about the magistrate system and really honed in on the magistrate judge in Charlotte that allowed DeCarlos Brown Jr. free.
But in the case of Irina Zarutska, DeCarlos Brown Jr., we know, had a long criminal history. And despite this, in his last encounter with the law prior to murdering Irina, Magistrate Teresa Stokes released him back into the community with only a simple, and I quote, written promise to appear for his trial. Now, sadly, it's all too common for a criminal to be let off easy by a judge, only to have him turn around and commit even worse crime. And you know, and I know, this is unacceptable. Officer Campbell, I want to turn to you quickly. Have you encountered situations where individuals with a history of violent crime were released and you saw later reoffended?
That would be the majority of the people I arrested.
The majority. Thank you, sir. In your view, how do lenient bail policies impact crime in Charlotte?
It would increase it because they know they're not going to be held accountable.
And how do you as a police officer feel when these criminals are arrested and are shortly released immediately back into the public?
I feel like majority of the work that I've done was pointless because they'll be out on the streets while I'm still writing the report.
Let me pause Officer Campbell right there. I've heard firsthand of this situation as well. And going back to the Summer of Peace and Love in 2020, when Democrats, Antifa, Black Lives Matter were burning cities to the ground all in the name of, you know, racial justice or whatever nonsense they were on about at the time, I had spoken to multiple WPD officers here in Wilmington when there were some protests taking place downtown. And while those individuals weren't charged with violent crimes, I heard from multiple law enforcement members that they were arresting individuals who were throwing bricks and bottle rockets and things at law enforcement. They would slowly arrest these individuals that were being violent, not ones that are protesting, but ones that are, you know, throwing bricks through buildings and things of that nature. Multiple of those individuals were back out on the streets before the law enforcement officer who had arrested them completed their paperwork. That is a completely unsustainable system. And we are hearing the exact same story here from Officer Justin Campbell with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. This is a real thing that happens all over the United States.
Well, in my view, lenient bail policies are not working in the city of Charlotte or cities across this nation. Criminals need to know that when they get arrested, they will not be immediately released on just an unsecured bond or written promise to appear. In fact, I want to share a story that former Union County DA John Snyder shared with me years back. A man was arrested just over the Charlotte border in Union County that I represent. Being a repeat offender in Charlotte, he suddenly noticed that the police car was headed in the opposite direction of Mecklenburg County Jail. After raising this concern with the police officer, he was informed he had been arrested in Union County, not Mecklenburg. And upon hearing this, the man began sobbing because he knew he was going to jail that night and would spend the night in jail. Jurisdictions across the state should strive to send a similar message wherever you are. Many of those issues need to be dealt with by our North Carolina General Assembly, as we've heard today, and I'm glad to see that they're already doing so with the passage of IRENA's law, and I'm certainly praying, and I hope all of you are urging Governor Stein to find the courage to sign it into law. And Mr. Woody, turning to you, could you please describe for all of us the changes that IRENA's law would make to North Carolina's system for bail?
In accompanying with the Pretrial Integrity Act, an offender who reoffends is automatically held 48 hours or until they see a judge in front of a first appearance. In addition to that, it would recuse the people from having an unsecured bail. They'd be required to post a cash bail, secured bail through a bail bondsman, or a family member with property or assets through an accommodation.
Well, and thank you for sharing that. And I believe Congress has got to take action as well. We cannot sit by and allow these mismanaged cities to put Americans in danger. In fact, I'm going to be introducing two bills in the next week, one for accountability, the other for transparency, as one of them is going to ensure jurisdictions that get federal grants for public safety do not defund their police or implement cashless bail, lest they lose any of those government funds, and one to require the Department of Justice to publicly identify every jurisdiction in this country that implements these cashless bail policies. And I look forward to working with my colleagues on the Judiciary Committee to deal with these important matters.
That's Congressman Mark Harris at the committee meeting yesterday describing some legislation that he plans on introducing and getting some clarifying statements, some clarifying information from Michael Woody, who owns a bail bonds company, is North Carolina's representative to the National Association of Bail Agents, about IRENA's law, which, by the way, as of right now, is still sitting on Josh Stein's desk. He is in a tough situation with this legislation. If he signs it, the progressives are going to hate him because that means he's going to be hard on crime and is willing to hold criminals accountable. If he doesn't sign the legislation, he will fall into the category that you've heard from Republicans at this committee here. Democrats are weak and soft on crime. Former Speaker of the North Carolina House, now Congressman Tim Moore, was at the hearing as well, and he once again honed in on the magistrate system in Charlotte and Mecklenburg County.
Frankly, here in Mecklenburg, the criticism has not been with the district attorney. It's been more with the magistrates and the judges, letting these criminals come in and go right out the door. I mean, Officer Campbell, you just testified there are times when you're still doing the paperwork and the criminal is walking back out on the street. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
And just curious, I mean, how is that, like, is that more often than not, or is that just kind of a rare thing?
No, it happens quite frequently.
I mean, that should not be that should shock everyone. And that should make drive the point home that this is not about money or programs or whatever else and some of these feel-good programs that get kicked around out there to try to divert people from jail. There are people who are dangerous, and they need to be incarcerated. And I'll tell you the other problem that we have, and that is the lawsuit a couple decades ago, I think the ACLU filed, at wanting to get folks out, deinstitutionalize folks with serious mental issues. Well, guess what you have now? You have people out on the streets. Your homeless problem has gone through the roof. You know, you can't go anywhere without seeing homeless encampments, even in my small town of Kings Mountain, where this is happening. It's happening all over the country. And it's because of these leftist policies of trying to get people deinstitutionalized who have mental issues. And guess what? Some people need to be in the community. But guess what? There are dangerous people who should not have been in the community. And I point to the situation with Irina Zarutska. Not only should this guy have not been out on bond from previous things, but why didn't somebody involuntarily commit this guy, right? I mean, this guy, you know, whatever you want to say, this guy should not have been on the streets. And these policies have to change. But guess what? It's a question of what's happened when it comes to judicial officials around, because you don't hear this as much in some of the other counties. I mean, you've got a data pool that you can look at.
And as what Congressman Moore is pointing out there is the data pool is in areas where you've got soft on crime Democrats, in areas where these policies like cashless bail and sign this piece of paper to promise that you're going to come back, in places where these programs exist, there tends to be more violence. I'll go back again to the commentary from Congressman Van Drew from New Jersey at the beginning. You don't need to be a lawyer. You don't have to have a degree in criminal justice. You don't have to have spent any time in the judicial system to very clearly understand that these policies are not sustainable. We've known this for a significant period of time, and it seems like right now that it is finally coming to a head. It's unfortunate that so many victims have had to have been created of these violent criminals and violent offenders, but I think we are finally hitting the tipping point with this. At least I hope we are, because it's completely ridiculous. Congressman David Rauser, who represents us here in the 7th Congressional District, if you're watching or listening across southeastern North Carolina, he serves on the Transportation Committee in Washington, D.C., and one of the kickers in all of this out of the Charlotte story is DeCarlos Brown Jr. was not even paying to be on the Charlotte light rail the night that he murdered Irina Zarutska. He did not even pay to get on there, because just like all of the other stupid, ridiculous policies in Charlotte, in Mecklenburg County, one of their other great policies is we don't have anybody checking tickets for our Charlotte light rail. So those have become essentially rolling homeless encampments for those.
Given my role on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, where I'm chairman of Highways and Transit, we're in the process of writing a highway bill, for lack of a better way to put it, and that's going to include an opportunity to make modifications to our transit programs. And one of the things that I've observed through my research that is really interesting to me and quite appalling is fare avoidance. You know, folks get on these light rails, and they're not paying any fare whatsoever. That was the case, you know, with the murder here in Charlotte a few weeks ago. And Mr. Campbell, if I can ask you, is that something that you personally have witnessed a good little bit? Is it lack of resources or lack of commitment to police these light rail cars and make sure people are paying their fares?
Well, the light rail system is controlled by CATS, and they employ their own security.
Right.
More cops, to me, would not be the answer. I mean, CATS can control their own fares, but there's never been a system that, you know, checks to see if they paid their fare or not in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the fundamental principles is you get more of whatever you incentivize. And if people do bad and they're not reprimanded, if there's no consequence, they're going to continue to avoid paying any fare. I think that's definitely an issue that we'll look at in the context of our highway bill.
If Charlotte can't figure out how to deal with making sure that people pay to use the ratepayer-funded Charlotte light rail system, If that is too complicated of a task for them, which it obviously is, because there's no enforcement mechanisms whatsoever, if that is so complicated, how am I supposed to have any hope in an area like Charlotte and Mecklenburg County? Folks, we're talking about something that is very simple to solve. You have somebody, either a person or a machine that checks tickets. If you go to any major city across the United States that has a train system, a subway system, this is what you see. Turnstiles, ticket checkers, ticket machines, and turnstiles that you scan your ticket on before it opens up. These things exist literally all over the United States of America. Charlotte is so incompetent. The leaders in CATS, the Charlotte Area Transportation System, the Charlotte City Council, the Mecklenburg County Commissioners, they are so incompetent that they can't figure that out. When you wrap your head around that, it makes sense as to why they don't have a solution for violent crime. They can't even figure the simple stuff out, like if you don't pay to use the train or the bus, you can't go on it. Not a very complicated issue, yet somehow in Democrats' great grandiose ideas, they have managed to complicate that to high hell and back. It's unimaginable. Congressman Chuck Edwards, also another representative here in North Carolina, jumped in on this committee hearing as well. He didn't hold much back either.
I want to apologize to you, first of all. I find it interesting that we've heard in many situations from the folks that have talked today efforts to distract us from what the actual issues are, efforts to create diversions from the horrible stories that we've heard from our witnesses here today. We've heard this issue politicized with documents that have been entered that have absolutely nothing to do with the relevance of your stories. And I apologize to you for that. Frankly, I'm embarrassed that way too many times this is the way Congress operates. But I can promise you that while this behavior might be taking place up here with this panel, your stories have resonated with every member that's up here. And we will remember these when we get back to Washington, D.C. I apologize that we're hearing from folks that just say, give me more money and I'll fix the problem. That's typically what we hear with about any problem that I've faced in Washington, D.C. Give me more money and then I'll fix it. If there's anybody here that believes that simply reaching deeper into their pockets will fix this problem, please leave a collection over here in front of Ms. Ross before you leave today. We've heard that less guns on the streets by law-abiding citizens would fix this problem. Ms. Alderman, let me ask you, would less guns on the streets by law-abiding citizens, would that have saved Mary's life?
No, not in Mary's case. Absolutely not.
It would not. I ask you, Mr. Woody, I don't think anybody here is an expert on Arana Zarutska, do you believe that less guns on the streets by law-abiding citizens would have saved her life?
Absolutely not.
And yet we're turning our conversations towards those types of things. We heard up here that Charlotte has the eighth best crime rate in the country. Ms. Alderman, do you take solace in knowing that somebody wrote an article that Charlotte has the eighth best in the country? Does that help you?
I don't care.
Exactly. That has nothing to do.
It's completely irrelevant.
With us saving Mary's life. We heard up here that, I think it was Ms. Adams that mentioned that there's been a 25% reduction in violent crime. I think we heard something similar from Mr. Ashner. Mr. Woody, well, I'll ask Mr. Federico, a reduction of 25%, does that give you any solace?
I'd like to see where it was. It certainly wasn't in our daughter's case, I can tell you that right now.
We heard up here that we should feel comfortable that in 2022, Biden signed the Bipartisan Communities Act. Mr. Federico, do you take any solace in that? Does that give you any comfort at all?
No. There's only one thing that would have kept my daughter alive, and that would have been keeping a career criminal in prison.
Exactly. And so I apologize to you. There's been so many distractions to what the conversation really should be up here. We've heard a number of times that there's a failure of policy, and I can buy that in some cases. Definitely, we need to eliminate cashless bail. That's a policy that we should go after. I would suggest more policy, we need transparency and we need accountability to the people that are charged with implementing those policies.
Chuck Edwards, they're calling out, and again, this is a lengthy committee hearing. It's a little over three hours. And so Chuck Edwards is just completely nuking all of these Democrat concepts. And we heard from people like Deborah Ross that crime is down. One of their expert witnesses talked about how crime isn't that big of an issue and crime is going down and so on and so forth. And so there's two things at hand here. Crime, whether it's going down or not, is irrelevant. The question is, do people perceive their communities as safer than they were in the past, or do they perceive them as unsafe? I think it is fair to state that the vast majority of people feel that their communities are less safe now than watching before. And that perception, to me, might even be more important than what the actual numbers are. If people don't feel like they are safe, that is a problem. Why don't they feel that they're safe? Because of these disastrous freaking policies that have been put forth by those on the political left. Congressman Pat Harrigan, also another member of North Carolina, is a Republican congressional delegation at the meeting yesterday as well.
I find it personally disgusting that members of this committee have suggested that this is political theater for the purpose of negotiating an open seat, while distracting from the fact that violent repeat offenders are continually let free from our judicial system. That is the problem that we have, and that is the only problem that we have, period. We've had a lot of talk about money today. I will actually give DA Merriweather some credit. He got together with local business leaders and local government officials to decide, okay, hey, what is the minimum amount that we actually really need in order to get the job done? Because from his words, he said, I don't want to throw money at this problem, because the problem really isn't money. And out of the 10 additional DAs that he needs with 5 additional staff assistants, that's exactly what the state legislature has authorized, and it's just waiting on Governor Stein's signature to be put into law. That's happening. But we've got to understand that the lack of 10 DAs in a system that has 84 DAs already is not the problem, and it's mutually exclusive from the problem of judicial posture with respect to judges and magistrates simply allowing violent repeat criminals back on our streets, as well as trial delays, which, as we all know, over the course of time, we lose witnesses, we lose accuracy of testimony, it degrades the system of justice that we have. We cannot allow this to continue to stand. But what I find absolutely indefensible is politicizing this committee testimony here today in front of these victims and the families of these victims, saying that this is for political purposes. Mr. Asher talked about statistics today. The statistics that he entered into his testimony today about declining crime are only through June of 2025. It does not talk about July, August, or September. And you know what's happened in July, August, and September? The murder rate has skyrocketed in Charlotte. We are picking and choosing what type of statistics we want to share to forge a narrative that is detached from reality. And that narrative does not line up to the experience of Officer Campbell, Mr. Federico, and Ms. Alderman. Let us not forget that. One of my Democratic colleagues said, don't judge us by what we say, but what we do with respect to money. Let me be very clear. The sole force behind defunding the police has been the Democratic Party, period. They have created unrest. They have created a desire within our population to not step up and serve in law enforcement. I had a long meeting with Johnny Jennings, the former chief of police in CMPD. And I asked for a meeting. I said, what's working? What's not working? I want to go through everything so that I might be able to help you. And at the end of what was supposed to be a 45-minute meeting that actually lasted 3.5 hours, he said, Mr. Harrigan, I just want to thank you. And I said, why, chief? And he said, because not one time in my entire career, 30 years, has an elected official asked to talk to me about what's working, what's not working, and that let me know that they had my back. Not one member of the Charlotte City Council, not one member of the Mecklenburg County Commission, not the mayor, not a single congressperson had ever come before him and asked, how can we help, as opposed to just absolutely running him through the mud when things didn't go their way in traditional media. Guys, we have a problem here. We have a very real problem that we need to work together to solve. But we have to understand what is the root of this problem. And it is, as Mr. Moore said, it is not money. It is poor policy built on poor principle that is leading us down the road to failed outcomes. We have failed leaders who are leading us down the road to failed outcomes, and it's their kids that paid the price. That's got to stop.
Great and very strong commentary there from Congressman Pat Harrigan at yesterday's House Judiciary Subcommittee on Oversight that was on the road. It took place in Charlotte. A lot of it surrounded, of course, the murder of Irina Zaruska back on August the 22nd at the hands of repeat criminal DeCarlos Brown Jr., arrested 14 times, violent criminal, charges of assault, beating up people with firearms, armed robbery. The list goes on and on and on. Completely avoidable, completely preventable. This and these policies are not sustainable. The General Assembly has introduced legislation, Irina's Law, to try and hold some of these magistrates accountable, where if they're not doing their job, they can immediately be ousted from their position. And it now sits on Governor Stein's desk. And as I mentioned earlier, the governor's got a real problem with this one. Because if he doesn't sign it, he is going to be immediately tied to the death and the murder of Irina Zaruska and so many others in North Carolina at the hands of these disastrous, stupid freaking policies. And if he does sign it, well, then he's going to have to deal with the progressive left that thinks it's okay for 22, 23-year-old girls to be violently and brutally murdered. He's going to have to deal with their nonsensical antics. I hope that Stein signs this. He's got till the end of the week to do so. He was here in Southport yesterday. I'm not sure what his schedule is for the rest of the week, but we'll watch it very closely. My gut tells me he's probably going to sign this legislation. If not, there's going to be hell to pay, I can promise you that, for Stein electorally and from a public perception standpoint. The people of North Carolina are fed up with what's going on. They're fed up that their cities, whether you're talking about Charlotte or Asheville, or hell, even Wilmington, that cities are being run amok, out of control. They've had enough of it. They want change. And so that legislation, again, currently sits on Governor Stein's desk. We'll track it and see how that begins, or if that moves and what he does with it before the end of the week. All right, a couple of quick things I want to jump into real quickly here, just to keep you up to date as to what is going on. Fortunately, the tropical system that we were tracking, still no impact to the north or South Carolina coast. Bermuda in the bullseye, but no problems for the East Coast, so good news there. Happening right now, Pete Hegseth has summoned some 800 members of the military. They are in Quantico for a major meeting. We'll watch and see what comes of that. I'm just going to do a refresh on my feed here to see if we are getting any new information on that. Doesn't look like anything now. Trump is apparently in attendance at that, so we will wait and see what comes of that today. And of course, tonight at midnight, we are expecting a federal government shutdown. Donald Trump is holding the Democrats' feet to the fire on this shutdown. Chuck Schumer wants to negotiate. Trump says, we're just not going to do it. You guys need to come to the table and bend down to the things that we want. There will likely be a government shutdown tonight. Reports of more than 100,000 federal employees resigning, mass layoffs potentially. There is a lot that goes on here. It will go on here over the next day or so. We'll keep an eye on it and likely join you tomorrow morning with a shutdown government. We'll be tracking all of the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget, tonight, 7 o'clock, our monthly hangout will be taking place. We'll be chatting probably a little bit about this committee hearing, government shutdown, depending on what happens in Quantico today with Hegseth and the military. A lot to get into. You can get access to that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. I'll send out another email notification for everybody, and we look forward to chatting with you at 7 o'clock tonight. Thanks to all of those that support the show financially on Patreon, and thanks to the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for our Tuesday edition. We're back here tomorrow morning on The Nick Craig Show.